I'd first like to ensure that we've all silenced our cell phones, and I'd ask that you please help me welcome Kelvin D. from Fargo, North Dakota, our speaker tonight.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kelvin Daniels, and I'm an alcoholic. So the grace of God, Miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of recovery as it's laid out in this book, and a great sponsor. I haven't drank since October 10th, 1996. For that, I'm truly grateful. In North Dakota, we usually clap for people when they do that, so that was uncomfortable. Sad. I almost had to leave when that didn't happen there. I'm going to have to start over. Hi. Jeez. Yeah, it's so I want to start off with a few things first, okay? One, I want to say thank you to Lee and the committee that asked me to come and share with you here. I want to thank the people that worked on the fundraiser and Bob is, and this is a high compliment, Bob is North Dakota meat cooking worthy, okay? So, I mean, that's like a high compliment. So you like officially will give you like a Norwegian name or something. You're going to be ready to rock, dude. You'd be like Bob Oslo. So it's the capital of Norway, in case anybody's wondering. So I want to thank that him and the rest of the people that were working on that and Lee's family for staying there with them over till tomorrow morning when I fly out at a little before 6. The next thing is that, as you can tell, I do not sound like the movie Fargo. We have had this discussion with multiple people. I don't know, care where I go in the country. I spoke in Iceland, and they go, oh, like the movie? And I'm like, damn. No, that is not the case. So, one, I don't say you betcha or yeah, sure at all. Yeah, sure I don't. So that's part of it. The other part of it is that no, I do not have a wood chipper. A lot of you have asked me that so far, so nope, don't. And yes, I was born and raised in North Dakota. And for some of you that go through and like, there wasn't any black people in the movie at all. That's as you go through and run that through your head. I'm from South Norway, so it works out. So think Viking ships with 20s, and we're good to go. So and a system. And so I mean, but that's basically the deal. It doesn't matter where I go anywhere in the country. I always have people that ask me, like, are you sure you're from North Dakota? And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. You know, it's great. So it's my favorite one is when I showed up in Kentucky. I love that. The guy is not expecting me to come off the plane. And so I get there and I talk to him right as I'm going to connect in. And he goes, oh, by the way, what do you look like? And I'm like a 6'3", light-skinned black guy. And he goes, you're black? And I was like, yeah, but I'm light-skinned, you know? And so I show up there, and I didn't know it, but as a part of that deal, they go to the governor, and you get a Kentucky colonelship. Like, Colonel Sanders is, like, for real. Like, they gave him a Kentucky colonelship. He wasn't in the Army or nothing. And you get, it's like a Kentucky militia deal. So I get a thing signed by the governor of Kentucky, this great, big, huge thing, and it says to Colonel Kelvin Daniels, and nobody back in Fargo thought that was cool at all. I did, and nobody would call me Colonel as much as I tried to get them to. So there you go. But it's one of those things where I laugh about that kind of stuff for me today because I'm comfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the people here. I love everything that we do here. But I was uncomfortable with so many things in my life that almost nothing can really shake me as far as my level of comfort most days.
I thought you were Mexican.
Oh. I don't even speak Spanish, man. I'm sorry. But thanks for that. That would be south Norway. But as I start looking at what got me here is the aspect of that feeling of desperately wanting and trying to find something to itch, this scratch that's within me, something that I can get to fill this hole that seems to be, that I've tried so many other things to fill. And I come to find out after being in Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter everything else I tried in my life, that this hole, this thing within me, ended up being a God-shaped hole. But I didn't have any idea what that was. And if you're out there and you're new today and it's the first thing you hear it is that, and now you're going to shut off mentally if you're anything like me, and I'm like, great, one of them. No, that's not my experience at all. I am not a guy who came into AA, did a few steps, and all of a sudden everything is wonderful and perfect, and I've walked those 12 golden steps to a life that God has laid out for me, that everything is perfect and I never have another issue. People that have that experience, bless them. But that is not my experience. I'm a guy that's a fallible human being. I'm a guy that's an absolute human as I can possibly be. And I mess up a lot of things, and I've messed up more in Alcoholics Anonymous than I did in drinking, because I had to learn to live life here. And I'll get into that here in just a minute. But basically, as I grew up on an air base in Minot, North Dakota, and I was automatically different than anybody else around me, no matter what, because we had our orders canceled 4 times as I was growing up. So every single time we had orders to go somewhere, they would cancel our orders because my dad was specialized in the military in a specific area. And as a result, I was born in North Dakota. I ended up staying in North Dakota, and I never got to go anywhere cool as far as getting to live there. We got to take a trip, but as far as like living somewhere, it didn't happen. And I was so envious all the time of all of these other people, because they all seemed to have a story, you know? And if you've ever been around people, this internal thing that I kept searching, trying to find, started early on with all of that. Because if you ever showed up at a conversation and you kind of hear these people over there, and they've all got their story, you know, they've kind of got their whole little thing. You can take you and your two best friends and you can sit there and laugh. Oh, you remember that time? You don't even have to tell the damn story. You just remember that one time? And then everybody laughs, and you're sitting there going, I want to laugh, you know? You want to be a part of that story, but you don't know how to be a part of that story. And I felt like that the whole time. I felt like I was that kid just on the outside trying to listen to everybody else's stories, figuring out how I was going to come in. And I had this issue with the fact that we hadn't been places, so I developed a technique that was very interesting. I started listening to what everybody else was saying and then using that when they were not around. So we were new kid had moved into the area where we were on the base, and he said, "Sir, have you guys been stationed?" And I started making up everything that I had heard from the last 3 kids that had moved out of our area and started taking all of their stories. And so that was working really good, because he was impressed that we had been to Texas and that we had been to Spain and that we had been to Germany. And that was cool, but it didn't work really well when I heard my mother's shrill voice of "Gentlemen!" yelling through the kitchen window that was open as she heard me spin my yarn of tales. And I learned a lesson that day. One, you can pick up an entire person by their afro and take them into the house. And where the whooping started. And I was told not to lie. And two, the second thing I learned was make sure that damn kitchen window was shut next time. And that's literally what I ended up with. There's the big secret that I've dealt with my entire life is I've never really felt like I'm enough. And there's days I still struggle with that today where I don't feel like I'm enough. And that's why even when the truth is good, you can always add a little something better to make it like that much cooler, you know? I mean, you could like legitimately be a guy who went into a burning building and like saved a kid, right? And it's in the paper. And somebody's like, hey, aren't you that guy that saved that kid? Yeah, but you forgot about the three puppies, you know? I didn't see that paper. Well, they didn't want me. Yeah, I was trying to be humble. You know, I mean, it's just like, I want to add something to everything. And I didn't realize what that was. I thought it was a pathological condition in which that I was going to need psychiatric care the rest of my life. It turned out that I got my description for exactly what was wrong with me when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous and I got into the book. And it said that I was restless, irritable, and discontented unless I can experience a sense of ease and comfort. I just love the ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. And I didn't realize that these things that I seemed to have that were an issue with me, this disconnect I had with people, that this restlessness I have, I just know I love the analogy that you ever watch a dog, they kind of circle and they just kind of drop, right? I'm a dog that can't find its spot. I'm getting ready to, yeah, it's going to be, ooh, what's that? And I got to go over there. No, it's better over there. And I can't get settled no matter where I am, because I just know that I'm always searching and seeking, trying to find something to fill this, no matter where I go or where I am or who I'm with. I just, I have that feeling. And I have the kind of irritability that if you cut me off and it's a bad spiritual hair day, I don't flip you off. I start imagining the right pit maneuver to clip your bumper just right so you go sideways and it semi tears you in half because we'll be in this a-hole on the road. But I'm too far too spiritual for that, so I don't ever do that. I could not live in California, man. You guys, you would have a different speaker because there is only so much that I have. And that's why people are like, why don't you ever live out of North Dakota? Because I don't want to kill people. Because there's some spiritual people here because of that reason alone, I think, because you get your patience tried in traffic. I can't understand, you got to go 5 miles and it takes an hour and 45 minutes? Nope. Granted, where I live, you can watch your dog run away for 5 days. It's flat. And if there's a traffic jam, you can see it 2 hours before you hit it, you know? So we got some disadvantages, but some major advantages too. And when it comes down to this whole thing, this irritability that's there, I think that something's going to fix it. And then I have this discontentment. I have this thing within me that even if I'm going to get what I think I really, really want, it's not going to be enough. And it happened with like that in relationships. I would require things from people. I would say, treat me like this, act like this towards me, do exactly what I say. And the people in my life would try to start getting that, and they'd get about that close, and I would jack it up and change the rules one more time. And they would sit there and they would do their best, and I would jack it up one more time. And pretty soon there's such a separation between me and people in my life. I'm looking at them saying, if you love me, you would do more. And they're looking at me saying, I'm done. I can't do anything else. What do you want next? And that is something that stayed with me well into sobriety. And it's one of those things that I just couldn't get my head wrapped around how people go through these things and they end up not being happy. I'm like, how could you not be happy? Look at you. You got this house and you got this car and you got this job. And I had all this material stuff put on people and thinking that those things were going to make them happy. But there wasn't anything there that I thought would do it. And it doesn't matter what I have, because if I'm not okay with who I am, and if I'm always trying to constantly find something to fill this spiritual hole within my guts, it doesn't matter what I have, I'll never be happy with it. And so I learned that I had this restless irritability and discontentment, and that was the thing that drove and would continue to drive every decision that I would make through my life. But I didn't know that when I'm in the middle of it. All I know is that when I drink, that everything seems to straighten out okay. That when things like this go on, everything, I seem to be able to get right here with you. And then right here a little bit over you. And yeah, it's on, you know. I don't know that this temporary solution of alcohol is filling this hole in my spirit. I didn't know that. All I knew was is that I seemed to be able to breathe a little bit better and that I could seem to look you in the eye without having to worry about what you thought of me. And I rolled with that whole thing. And I behaved in a very inappropriate manner through most of my life. And by the time I'm in seventh grade, I'm a caged animal, you know. I'm the kid that I got to go to recess like maybe five or six times between second or third grade and sixth grade total, like over that time span. And they would literally go through and every day, because I had some social issues, I had to go into the office and I had to literally copy the entire dictionary word for word. So I'd have to copy the word, the definition, and I filled notebooks and notebooks and notebooks of paper. And I had this huge vocabulary, which was great. And then I started smoking weed and I forgot a bunch of that stuff. And so I should have been a doctor. But I literally went through and as soon as they were like, are you going to be better? Uh-huh, uh-huh. Because I just want to go play. But it's like letting a lion out an entire damn field of sheep. You know, you're like, you promise you're not going to eat any? Nope, I promise, I swear. I'm not even hungry right now, you know? And you just go out and you're like, And I don't know how to act. So that's what they, in the grade school, you don't get recess in junior high. But you get gym class, you know? And I'm not doing good because I'm looking and searching. I've had a chance to drink by the time I'm in that 12, 13-year-old time. And I know what it feels like to be able to look somebody in the eye when I have a chemical in my system. And I know what it feels like to be able to be okay inside. And so now I'm searching and I'm looking, I'm trying to grab anything and get my hands on to get my body. And I'm going to the wall with it. And the problem is that I still have this thing in there that isn't filling up when I don't have something in my system. So I do what anybody does. I'm in gym class and we're playing wiffle ball. And in California, you guys don't have snow in that like wipes you out for like months at a time like we do. So we were playing inside in gym class wiffle ball. And I'm thinking, I'm going to put this thing off the back wall of the gym because it's an instant homer, right? I'm swinging for the fences and I strike out in wiffle ball. And yep, and that happened. Some of you people that laughed. Problem was, it was the teacher that did it. And he laughed, and I had a reaction. I still had the bat. And so I beat him with the bat, which makes me sound gangster as hell, but it was a plastic bat. And he didn't get broken bones, just a bunch of welts and some embarrassment. And he was like, ah! Oh, wait, it's plastic. But that does get you to start seeing people with a lot of initials after their name. And they sent me in to go see this counselor. And this poor guy, he wants to hardline me, you know. So I go in, I sit in the chair, and he tells me, why don't you cut the crap and tell me what's really going on? You know, and he's puffing up at me. And I wasn't the ominous figure I am today. I was 5'4", 120, and I had a fro. And I wasn't intimidating. But when he did that to me and kind of, he had this little paperweight on his desk. It was like this big, and it had like the little thing where you turn it, and it had like a little golfer guy in the middle, you know. And so I grabbed that, I look at him, and I said, I feel like grabbing that paperweight and beating you with it until you quit shaking and moving. And he said, session's over. And he had me leave his office. And I figured, oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. So I can win this way. This will work. And the next day, I have to go in and see this guy again. The paperweight's gone. And I instantly in my mind, I switch everything around and I go, That's it. That's it. Get them before they can get you. Get them before they can get you. And I start running that stuff through my head, and I start coming up with all these plans. And by the time I graduated from high school, I was blessed with a very sharp mind and a very gifted body at that time. And I was a rocket scientist, basically. I had a 27 on my ACT. I had a 1685 or 1725 on my SAT. I could go anywhere I wanted to go. I was recruited by Special Operations for the military and was assigned to go to the Air Force Academy on a full athletic ride for football and wrestling, and got assigned a mentor that had pictures of himself tackling Rocket Ishmael. This dates me a little bit, so that was really cool right then. It would be like, I don't know, there's nobody that would have been that cool during this time. There was no dabbing back then, you know. Nobody did something and went like, did their whole thing and like took all the glory for themselves. I mean, they high-fived their teammates and it was solid. And we also didn't text either. I hate texting. Anytime we get it, I'm not even going to go there because I snap when it comes to that. But I'm in. I'm going. It's going to be an amazing deal. And I wanted to be a SEAL before being a SEAL was cool. You know, I mean, that was my ticket. And they have you take all these tests and they have you do all these things. And before I realized it, they look for a certain intelligence level and a certain aggression level that will make you the perfect candidate. And by the time I was done burning that all to the ground, I was told that and nothing against anybody, but at this time they had the most liberal entrance rate. They said the Marines won't even take you, dude. And that was bad, because there was no way I could do what I really wanted to do. And I threw away all of that, because by the time I'm done with all of this, I've got 5 felonies hanging over my head, everything from attempted manslaughter to insulation of a riot and destruction of federal property. And my entire life went from right there at that moment, from the day and the time of sitting there looking at the plastic wiffle ball bat to here and wondering how the hell all that happened. Because now I've got more and more of these people with all these initials, and they're giving me more and more of these tests and more of this stuff, and they're trying to figure out a way to manage my behavior. And all I need is a drink, you know. If you guys would just get off me and let me get what I need, thanks. I don't need a med, you know. I just, is that Haldol? Okay, maybe I'll take some of that. And that's not something you make up. You don't get Haldol because they want to try something to see if it's going to work. I took this MMPI thing, like a whole bunch of different stuff, and a whole bunch of other tests, and they started asking me all these questions. And you can only keep track of all of your lies for so long, which is why... Has anybody here taken the MMPI before? Okay, like maybe 2 people. Wow, that's another thing in North Dakota we're way different on. Out here, they know all y'all are nuts already. They're just trying to... they're trying to figure out who to ship to California. So... just kidding. It's basically, it's a test that they give you. It's a psychological profiling test, and they ask you this series of questions the same way about 800 different times. So you go through, and they say, oh, yeah, yeah. Are you depressed? Well, you know you got to say no to that, because you don't want an I love me coat and an indefinite stay, which is what I keep hearing from people. We're going to give you an undetermined amount of time of entry. What? That doesn't sound fun, you know, so... I know you say no if you're depressed. And then, have you ever suffered from depression? Haha, you tried to trick me there. No. You know, are you sad right now? No. You know. And then, have you ever had feelings of sadness? Maybe. You know. Have you ever been sad? Yeah, there was this one time. And then you just kind of start going through and and I was I was like the case study. I mean, I was like a bad Lifetime movie, you know? I mean, you get a person that wants to sit down with a notebook and talk to me about my feelings for a little bit, If you were a professional and you were a woman and I walked in and I saw that, I'm like, oh yeah, my goal is to now make you cry and feel sorry for me, you know? And the guys, that if I got a sniff out of them, then I knew I was home free. But there was only one woman out of all the psychologists I saw that I didn't break into tears, because I would start telling them about how bad it was when I was brought up. You know, I mean, when you're in sixth grade and nobody gives you a Valentine at all, not even the teacher, that's cause where you can, now, I mean, today, I could shoot up a school and get off, you know, on something like that. But back then, I mean, they would just say, oh, man, we're so sorry that happened to you, you know, I mean, and I know what's on, you know, and I would start telling them about how I grew up and what the emotional and mental abuse was like and what the physical abuse was like. And I would tell them all these things that they needed to hear in order to get me out of trouble one more time. And I would start taking all those things and breaking them all down a piece at a time and a moment at a time and a decision at a time just to get everybody on my side. And by the time I'm done with everything, I get my all these profiles back and they say that I'm bipolar, which, that's fun. They say that I'm borderline schizophrenic, hence the Haldol, which that still doesn't make any sense, because if you're borderline schizophrenic, if you're this much more, then you're fully on. If you're this much less, it's only once in a while somebody says something to me that I don't really use in here, and things like that. And then, you know, and that I had a oppositional authority disorder and that I was ADD and ADHD. Now, that's a lot of stuff. And I didn't know that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that I figured something out after being sober almost 20 years. And it's pretty simple. That everybody, when they come into AA, when they're new, is a little bipolar. And I can tell you why. It goes a little something like this. You're standing there, and you're trying not to let anybody see that you're scared. And a girl comes in, and she goes, and you're like, yeah, yes, oh yeah, that's great. I can't wait to see what our babies look like. And you just go there, you just bang, you know, you just know your whole, your it's everything's beautiful. And then you realize she was smiling at the person next to you. I hate myself. I just wish I would die. Nobody's ever going to want to be with me ever again. But when she walked by, her arm brushes my arm. Oh, well, maybe everything is okay. I didn't realize that's how we were, right? All I can think is that all of these things they're all trying to give me are what they're going to try to do to help. Because on the outside, I look like a crazy person. And that's the problem, is that I look like a crazy person and I look like I have a drinking problem. Those are the two things that I have. The thing that differs is that I'm not crazy, and I don't have a drinking problem. And I couldn't get anybody to understand those two things, because anytime I drank was the only time I felt normal. Anytime I grabbed a bag of this or a bottle of that or anything else that was there and put it in my system was the only time I could look you in the eyes. The only thing that seemed to falsely fill that hole that it was gaping in my spirit. It's the only thing that would do it. And they're trying to tell me to stay away from the only thing that makes me feel like somewhat of a whole human being. And that the problem is that even if I looked you in the eye and meant it with every fiber of my being and promised you that I would not do it again, that I would end up doing it again. And I had no, and that type of behavior looks a little crazy. And I didn't realize that what I was dealing with was this little thing they called the obsession of the mind. That even after I had been away from alcohol, it's no longer in my body anymore, that this little thing in my head that is the ultimate justifier, the ultimate thing that seeks and searches for a little bit of comfort and a little bit of stability and a little bit of way to fill that hole in my gut, that it will lie and it'll tell me and twist and turn things around in my perception enough where a drink is a solution again. And I don't know how I end up back in that spot again. And any time I ever said that, I meant it. Anytime I said, I don't know why, I really did mean that. Mentally, I could not get my head wrapped around how I knew I had these consequences and I would come back to that drink. But I would come back to that drink. And it would happen again and again. And the problem is that as you're in that position, you're doing those things, when they start telling you that these other things are wrong with you, that sounds like a lot better than I don't know. And I went so far down the rabbit hole that I'm sitting in a trailer on an Indian reservation, and we're out of booze, we're out of drugs, and I'm drinking Pine Sol out of a jar because that had, well, it had been strained through bread first. We weren't just drinking it out of the bottle. God. It's like saying I put ice in my Drano, but it is. And I'm drinking Pine Sol. Because that's the only thing that I so desperately need to fill something that's in here that I'll do that. And by this time I'm an animal. I'm collecting for dealers. I'm beating people for money. That aggressive skill set that I had that they that looked wonderful to them, they wanted me to use it for good. I wasn't using it for good. And I'm doing things to God's kids, and I'm seeing things done to God's kids nobody's supposed to see or do. And I'm an animal by now. And I got to desperately fill something in me. I got to do something to fill something, and I don't know how to not do that. And I got to the point where I think I'm possessed by demons, so I start laying my flesh open to let demons out of my body. And if you're there and that's your solution, welcome. Because that's my if you're your best, that's your best decision. I've heard some people, my best thinking got me here. My best thinking was, I have demons. You know, they need to go away. So this is what I'm going to, that's my best thinking. My best thinking is that I can do these horrible things to people for money because that'll help me feed my habit. That's my best decision making and thinking. And I end up finding a solution for all of that stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where I find a final solution. That's how I finally get a chance to connect to something that ends up filling that hole in me enough where I don't have to go out and do those things anymore in order to try to have it filled for just a half a second. Where I get a long-term, that's what the exchange is, and I didn't know that was going to be the case, and Alcoholics Anonymous ended up intervening in a special way in my life. I had no idea that I was going to end up going to a meeting. I had no idea that I was going to end up being at that meeting at that night, or what the deal was going to be. All I know is that at this point in time, I've got these pending felonies hanging over my head. And that I've got to do something in order to get the heat off. And I've got to do something so that my family will let me stay at their house again. Because if I don't, then I can't be on probation. I can't be out on bail if I'm not at a stable address. So I got to try to do something to stay where I am. And I end up going to this meeting this night. And it's on a Thursday, and I haven't showered since Sunday. And I walk in, and the guy's pushing the last smoker down the stairs, you know. It's like, come on, man, come go, you know. And he turns around, he locks eyes with me, and he looks me in my eyes, and he says, welcome. And he holds the door open for me. And I go into that meeting, and this guy gets up, and he starts sharing his story. And I couldn't make it through the whole meeting. Because this guy starts talking about the things that are going on in him, that some of the same things are going on in me. And I have to get out of there, and I have to go do the only thing I know how to do. And I go out, and I grab that first one, and I throw it back, and I grab the second one. I don't think I got it finished. The only thing going through my head is you're a loser. You're supposed to be serving your nation right now. You're supposed to be doing this. You're supposed to be doing that. That's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be blah, 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 blah. You're living in your parents' house, and you're going to go to prison. I mean, minimum 25. The guy already told you, you're done. And this is going to happen. And that's who you are? And it's just going over my head, and I can't get it to stop. And I make a decision that night, I'm done. And I end up praying all night for God to kill me. My parents had, my family had left for the weekend. It was a Thursday. I called in sick to work, and I got sick over that weekend in a way I've never been sick since. I came down hard off of everything I had ever had. No medical, no nothing. And every night I'm praying and praying out loud, screaming, God kill me, God kill me, because I can't stand the pain, and I can't get off my floor or out of my bed to even get to where the stuff is to even try to ease it. I literally can't move. And the only time I move is when I seize up enough and I fall out of the bed and I land up on the floor, and then I try to get out of there and I somehow crawl back in the bed because I'm so cold, and then I get so, anybody who's been through it knows. And I don't know how to get back to, I don't know how to get to that spot. I don't know how to get away from it. And all I know is that guy looked me in the eyes and he told me, welcome. And I got to try to go back there. Because by this time, nobody says welcome to me, and nobody dares look me in the eye. And I'm an animal. And those people saw past the animal. And I end up staying sober that next week. And I end up getting to that meeting that Thursday. I went back in there, and there's a group of guys, and this guy is standing in the group of people, and he heads down the sidewalk at me and catches me before I even get up to the building where the guy had shook my hand to let me in. And I'm thinking, great, I left out of that meeting early last night, last week. Yeah, they're not going to let me stay. So I mean, I ball up my fists and I'm ready, and I'm loaded, and I'm standing like this, and he comes up and he's like, hi, welcome, you know, and I'm like, I almost swung on you, you know? I mean, I don't get it, you know? And he's like, you were here last week, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, great, great, let me introduce some of the guys. And he takes me up and he starts introducing me to people that are there, and it resurged, resentment instantly arose. I had my first, I wasn't even a member of AA yet, and I mean, it's rolling, you know? There was a guy that was in eighth grade, he had failed a few, like, 4 years in grade school, and by the time he was in eighth grade, he was like 16 and much more developed than the average seventh grader, if you understand what I'm saying. And there's nothing worse than like an almost man running around when, you know, beating the hell out of the seventh graders. And I hadn't hit my growth spurt yet. I had hit it by now, and that's the first one of the first guys I see, and I'm like, oh great, I can't wait. Going to the bathroom. You know, I mean, I'm already planning on how I'm going to just drown this guy in the toilet. And I'm, so God intervened. These guys in AA, they get me rolling. And it's a beautiful thing. And the only thing they're doing all night is, do you have a sponsor? Do you have a sponsor? Do you have a sponsor? And I'm like, no, you know. And there, you could tell, like, the ones that were coming up, that you can always get this little picture in your mind of, okay, if this was a guy I sponsored, what I would tell him to do, right? So nothing's better than you go ask that guy if he has a sponsor or if he needs a ride to coffee. And they were like, no. You know, and so they're coming up and they're doing this. Hey, do you have a sponsor? You know, I mean, they're not even like getting close enough to like touch me, you know? And I'm like, no, you know, because I don't even know what the hell it is, you know, but they keep asking, and then they wink at each other when I say no. And I'm just like, once again, inside joke, inside thing, where's my bat? You know, I mean, I start looking, because I got to get you before you get me. And I'm listening, and yep, there we go. That's what, you have to get a sponsor. And this guy that introduced himself to me and shook my hand, he had his business card, said Kraft Foods on it, and he had a tie on, and I'm like, oh yeah. Like race cars. Like they give you money and like help you out, sponsor, you know? Like they're gonna like help straighten everything out for me. It's gonna be perfect. And it's a Kraft. And I'm like, damn, he must be good, you know? So he paid for coffee like twice. That's it. And And, but that's what it was. So I asked this guy to sponsor me that night, and I didn't realize that that was going to give me the ability to basically have the suck-ups that were trying to impress him that he sponsored spend time with me and try to take me everywhere in like some type of sick competition to show who was the better AA member to him, and that I was going to be the new guinea pig. And they so Jeff, can you please tell me why the traditions are so important for us?
Well, thank you very much for asking.
You know, I mean, they ask him these just asinine questions, and he comes back, and it sounds like the worst AA Amway pitch I've ever heard, you know?
Well, first we start here, and then we're going to downlink to two more of you, and then you're going to help more, and then before you realize it, it's going to be an empire, and you're going to all get paid, you know? It's all I hear, you know? And I'm just like, I hate you all, you know?
I don't want to be by these people because I don't know how to be around them because I'm so far removed from who they are that I can't put an idea in my mind at all at how they become that way. I can't be them. And that makes me just crazy. And all I know is that I keep hearing that you have to have a sponsor, that you have to do these steps, and that you have to go to these meetings, and that you don't say no to AA requests. And it's all of this crap. And they said, and you don't get to go anywhere near new girls. And they had like all these other things that they kept throwing on. And I'm like, when does this damn list end? You know, the rules are endless. You know, it's like AA prison. And it was a nonstop barrage of trying to do all of these things. And no matter how pissed or how frustrated or how afraid I got, I would always go back to the idea, I can't be an animal like this anymore. I can't be that guy anymore. I can't hurt people like that anymore. I couldn't sleep when I was new because every time I closed my eyes, I would hear bones break and I would see blood spatter and I would hear people scream the things that I had done. And I had blood on my hands that I didn't think would ever wash off. And I knew that no matter what, the rest of these people were fine because they talked about God and they were going to be okay and they were going to get forgiven and all the other crap that they talked about, but not me because I'm too far from that. I'm too far from that. I'm so damaged and so broken, there's no way you can reach me. And they look past that. And love started to repair my brokenness. Love and people that would reach out to me and that would show me what God looked like even though I couldn't look directly at him. I got to see God work in you way before I ever got to know him. The people in AA were the example of what his love was and what his compassion looked like and what forgiveness looked like and all the things that were good in the world. That is what AA showed me. They look past the monster and I didn't know that was God. I just thought it was good people. And I didn't know that he was working through them. And my life started to get really crazy in AA. And I had these court cases pending. And they were pending and pending and pending. And they kept getting pushed out. And they kept getting pushed out. And I'd get just freaked out. And I'm like, okay, next week's court, next week. We have to reschedule. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? It's like torture. And I get assigned to this lady who had a very bad name associated to her. She had like a 70% violation rate. And they were just going to, and I know that's their plan. They're not going to wait for me to screw up. They're going to give me her. She's going to find a loophole, and that's how they're going to send me. That's why they're not doing court. So now the conspiracy starts running, and I start spinning hard. And I don't want to even go see this woman because if you touch her, she's like the devil. You know, I just can't be in her presence because she'll get you. And And my sponsor told me I had to shake her hand and that I had to thank her for her time when I was done. And I flip. I'm like, what? I pay supervision. I'm like, I start dropping F-bombs and freaking out and screaming at him. And when I walked into her office, I come walking up on her and I'm like, hello, ma'am. And I put my hand out, you know, and her hand's in her desk. I'm going to get shot listening to my sponsor. And this lady, and I stand up and I'm like, thank you for your time. And that's how things go. And as I'm doing more in AA, I go up to her and she says to me, hey, I said, ma'am, I'm sorry, I have to come and ask you this, but, and I'm current with her. I mean, I'm going in and seeing her every single month, doing everything. It was weekly, and then it went to monthly, and I'm going in and I'm seeing her, and she goes, how's it going? And I'm like, I'm going to 4 meetings a week. I have a commitment here. I go do this. I go do that. This is my schedule, and this is how many hours I'm working, and I would do that, and this is how much I paid on my restitution on a previous charge that I had. And she's like, okay. And so when I went to her and I said, I know I'm not allowed to leave the state, ma'am, but I really need to go to Nebraska because Clancy, the Eye in the Sky is there. My sponsor told me I have to go. And she goes, what's a Clancy Eye in the Sky? I said, I don't have any idea, but he said I have to go. And she said, okay, here's your papers. And she gave me papers, no hassle, no nothing. And then I came back. She goes, well, how was it and who is it? And I'm like, he's this guy and he said this and he did that and he slapped some guy that brought him coffee. And, went, ah! And it was amazing. And I mean, that's all I really got out of it. But it was awesome. And, you know, and anytime I had anything going on, I would say, hey, I got this, or hey, I got that. And she was like, there you go. And one time I took off and I had forgotten my papers and I freaked out and I called her and I said, hey, I'm going to have these guys drop me off here. I have somebody else coming to get me. They'll bring me right back to the state. And she goes, don't worry about it. Here's my personal cell number. If you get stopped or if there's anything that is a problem, you have them call me directly. And here's the number to another person that I'm going to make aware of the situation in case they can't get a hold of me. They can call this person that's on call and da da da. And I'm like, okay. And by the time I'm a little over I walk into her office one day after I've been close to a couple years sober, and she looks at me and she says, you're not a criminal. And I'm like, what? She goes, no, and I talked to the state's attorney, and I'm like, oh, great. Now this is how they're going to drop the shoe, right? Because this is the same state's attorney that said, you're going to go in the deepest, darkest hole I can find. You're done. She said, I talked to that state's attorney, and she said, we're going to run a deferred imposition of sentence on all charges and run them all concurrent. And as soon as your restitution is paid off for your previous charge, you don't have to, everything is just done, it's gone. And I walked into her office after I had paid up the final restitution, and she handed me the papers and she said, you never have to say you're a felon. And I end up being excited and elated, and I didn't realize what had just happened is I had just picked up a pimp. I'll explain about it because it's kind of pretty simple. Because as soon as the papers were filed and done, she said, so by the way, I have this guy that is having some issues, and I was wondering if you wouldn't mind taking him to some meetings. So I traded my, I didn't realize I had just become the AA ho. And her pimp hand was strong, let me tell you. She had me going everywhere and doing everything, you know. She was just like, and then here's another one, and I'm like, crap, you know. And I got this rep in AA of being the guy that you send the guys that nobody else will work with, and I end up serving AA the best of my ability. And the problem is that when you're serving AA to the best of your ability, it's your abilities. And my abilities, because I take credit for everything that happens in my life, and I don't have a personal relationship with God, You know, it's the best way I heard it described is that guy's a self-made man and he worships his creator. I worship my creator and I was a self-made man. I became a big deal in AA. I was the youngest DCM in North Dakota's history, both by physical age and age of sobriety. The DCM that was there, I was like their little special pet project, and they didn't have anybody to run for alternate, so they said, hey. And I'm like, I'll do it. And this guy is sober forever, you know, he's awesome, you know, and he's like, yeah, I'll take him. Come on, they vote me in as alternate DCM. He gets cancer and dies within 4 months. And I'm thrust into the service structure of AA, and I have every commitment you can possibly have. I am gone all the time. I am rolling, and I start building up what I affectionately like to call an AA resume. And I started compiling my list of how wonderful all the things I did in AA were. And I made my list and I carried it around in my back pocket, and it was beautiful. And if you said anything to me and you didn't qualify because of the things that you do, you can't say anything. And I don't care how long you've been sober. If you don't do the big book a certain way, how soon do you think it is until you're going to drink? You know? And I became a guy that used the book as a weapon. I became the guy who started using the steps in the book as a divisive force. And I started tearing apart the very thing that I loved. I started tearing apart Alcoholics Anonymous around me. And I would start talking about these ridiculous ideas that I had about how if you're not doing it like this, you're dumb, you know? And I'm doing all of these things. And the problem is that that part in Bill's story where it says if we fail to perfect and enlarge our spiritual life, and I would tie on to this. I mean, I'm like the people in the Crusades that find that one little passage in the Bible that gives me complete and total permission to annihilate everything in His name. You know, God wills it. You know, I mean, I'm that guy. And so I'm taking this one thing, because it doesn't say through prayer and meditation. It says, through work and self-sacrifice for others, we will not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. So I am working and self-sacrificing for others and keeping credit and stacking up this debit sheet that everybody owes me, you know, because of, you know, in AA, you get credit for time served, you know, just like prison. And you end up right there in that spot, and I'm on it, you know, and I'm running around Alcoholics Anonymous. By the time I'm 8 years sober, I'm suicidal in the middle of AA. And if you're saying things like, I would rather eat a bullet than I would drink again, that is not spiritual growth. And if you said that and you're there and you're in that spot, please, I'm here tonight. Talk to me. I've been right there. I've been the guy sitting there with a gun in his lap in the middle of AA, in the middle of, with every service commitment and this huge list of all the things that made me wonderful here. And I got to a point where it got painful enough where I was reduced to prayer and meditation. I was leveled by my own personality to a level low enough where I was reduced, where I would start to go to that path. And I had picked up that same trait I had when I was a child, when I was outside in the front yard and I got snatched in by my fro. I was listening to everything other people talking about in AA, about the spiritual connection they had with the God of their understanding, how wonderful it was. And I would make sure they weren't at the meeting and I would use the things that they said, because it wasn't personal to me. And I spent a lot of time in AA having to rebuild relationships with people that I had completely torn through. And I spent a lot of time in AA. My alcoholism is like a tricky, sneaky, messed up ninja. It is like Ninja SEAL Team 6. It's the worst thing ever. If you ever want to be free from alcoholism, because this thing it attaches on to anything that I can use to take his place within me. And I spent a time on gambling bad, because I had done pretty well and I had repaired relationships. I had made these amends. I started doing those other things. And, you know, blackjack ain't bad. You know, you can, come on, you know, it's not like I'm not killing people. You know, I'm not doing this. It's just blackjack. You know, it's just this, it's just that. And it tied on and it latched onto that and it started to swell it in. And the problem is that when I have a God-shaped hole within me, when I start shoving other stuff in it, he can't fit all the way. And it's not because he wouldn't. It's because I won't let him. And I have to start chipping away a little piece of that at a time. And I've messed up a lot of stuff since I've been in AA. And I made some changes during that time in my life, and I got a man at that time who helped get me on a path. And I got a little closer, and I started doing things and taking actions and having some pretty amazing stuff happen. And then things started going the wrong way, and I started getting pretty upset. And I started, of course, you know, I mean, if everything else, everybody else are, and I don't know if anybody else does this, but if you're sitting there in AA and you're watching other people have success who seem to do less than you do in AA, that ain't fair, you know? It's like, if this guy doesn't take that H&I commitment, he should break his leg, you know? I mean, something bad should happen to this a-hole, you know? I mean, that guy has never went out on a panel. He hasn't drove 4 hours to talk to three people and come back and felt spiritual over it. Make a filling fall out or something. I mean, they deserve it. Because, damn, you do these things. But I'm the guy who's sick. I have this idea that if I take the trash out and fold the clothes, then I should get a reward at home. And there's no balance sheet, you know? And I have an expectation that if I do things that I'm supposed to get a treat. I'm like the worst lab in the world. I'm like... You know, I'm just waiting for somebody to toss me the frisbee again, you know? It's like, I'm like, I didn't piss on anything today. Do I get a snack? You know, I mean, I'm like, I'd be like the best dog ever. And I don't understand how I go to that spot again and again. But I end up back there. And I looked at that as my whole thing, because I didn't see a relationship with God as anything but that. As a master and a dog. Because that's what I felt like I was. I'm not a human being. You don't get to be one of his kids when you do the things that I did to his kids. You don't get to be that. And he had a different plan for me than that. And he does. Today, I'm a failed man today. A lot of times, I'm not one of these people that is the pristine spiritual giant of AA. I struggle with God from time to time still, and I think it's because it took me so long to get close. It took me so long to fill that void that there's times it's easy to stray away from it. And the problem is that I'm like the best example of "I'll show you, screw me" that I know. And it's like, I'm going to punish God because I'm going to stop praying, you know? It's like, I do this meditation thing with a couple guys and pray with them every Monday through Friday. And there's days we get on there and they're, you know, and we listen to each other pray out loud. It's a pretty neat thing we've been doing for quite a long time. And if there's a day where one of them are missing a meeting or have to miss it that morning, or there's something where I have something that pops up for work, I'm like, ha, got you. I don't have to pray today. And I'm like, it's not like I can't do it by myself. You know, it's like I'm gonna teach him, you know, because something didn't go the way I wanted it to. The good news is that God to me is a gentleman, and a gentleman does not go where he's not asked, and will hold the door,
and allow you to pass through. We'll be there to hold the door and allow you to come back. But we'll always be right there. And today I get to try to do my best to be that guy. And I get to try to do my best to lead people to the door. I get to do my best to try to help other people connect with him. And the times that I've strayed away from that, I've always been led back by you, by the examples that God shows me through the people that are around him, the people that are around me, and the people that I get to see that are his hands and his feet and his grace and his love. And if you're somebody who struggles with that in Alcoholics Anonymous, I used to be the guy that said, I just have trouble with that God stuff. That is the most chicken crap BS excuse that you can have, even though it's true. Because the whole thing is that what I really won't say is that I'm afraid. And I can't really say that to you because then you'll get to see exactly what I am, which is spineless, because I don't have any belief in anything besides myself, so I have no power, so therefore I have no way to combat the fear. And I can't look you in the eye and tell you the truth about that, so I have to just say cutesy things like, I just don't get the God stuff. And if you hear a guy saying that, he's afraid. And I pray that that guy has somebody that steps in and shows an example of what he is to them. I was at a retreat here about a month and a half ago, and one of this guy, Roger, out of Minneapolis, Roger said the most profound thing. He said he's standing there and he's saying, Father, you know me. Help them know you better through me. Father, you know me. Help them know you better through me. And he's sharing this with us that he said, you know, he goes, it's intimidating. You have all these guys that are here and they're looking for some answer, and you want to try to come and say this, and this other guy knocked it out of the park before me, and I'm sitting there and I don't really know what to say, and the only thing I can come up with is, Father, you know me. Help them know you better through me. And that's what you guys got. And when he said that made all the sense in the world to me. And I know I went over on time, and I'm sorry for that. And I just want to thank you all today for the opportunity, the ability to allow me to be the man today the blood on my hands that I thought would never wash off has been removed from me. That the people that I hurt, the things that I did, I've been able to make amends in ways where I started coaching little girls' soccer teams. And helping kids and helping people repair aspects of their lives and doing things in areas that I didn't think I'd be invited to. And today I have FBI and DHS sign-in credentials, and I'm the sector chief for IT for a joint task force for the state of North Dakota. I would have never been able to be that. And it was really fun when they said, can you explain 1993 through 1996 to me? And I said, which part? And they said, all of it. And how can, who was, yeah, long story. That part was fun for me to get to do. And I get to be a husband to a wife, and I get to be a father to a daughter today that I don't know how to be a dad to a 15-year-old girl. And damn boy that wants to date her. And and I thought it would be cute. I really did. I thought the whole thing that they do in TV and stuff like that, that it would be cute when you say, I know where to hide bodies. And I'm thinking it's going to be a laugh. And the shock and horror on your daughter's face, she goes. And then the death glare you get from your wife as she's going. It's not cute. And apparently those a-holes on TV get paid to say funny things and make people laugh. And that did not happen for me. And I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to be that. I don't know how. The last thing I'll say real quick, and then I'm going to sit down. My daughter was sitting up, and she was on the phone. She was FaceTiming. with this boy, and it's 10:30 at night. And I'm pissed. Because I come out of the bedroom, and all I hear is her talking and sitting there, and I go, it's 10:30. No, I haven't knocked on the door, because it was just barely cracked enough where I could hear it. So if it's not, like, if the jam isn't touching, that's open to me. And pretty soon, if it's not deadbolted, that's going to be open to me. And so they're FaceTiming, and the door's open. So I don't say anything. I don't ask a question. I open the door, and I'm like, it's 10:30. And she goes, and I don't realize this is now going to be embarrassing. This is going to go right back to the same I'm going to be cute thing, but this isn't cute at all. This is, I'm the dad. And I said, get off the phone. He should have enough respect to not be talking with you at 10:30 at night. What the hell are you thinking? And I stomp out of there, and I'm proud of myself. Because I've laid the law down, damn it. You know, he'll know better. Ha 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 ha. My wife told me that was not the case, and I could not understand why my daughter was upset. And when my wife, we didn't get into a fight on this one. She looked right at me and she said, "The reason why they're talking at 10:30 at night is because she just got done studying, he just got done studying. They're both straight A students, and they both play sports." And in between practice and everything else they did, the only time where they could talk for 10 minutes, which I cleared her to do, was at 10:30 at night. And so I walked into my daughter's bedroom humbly, and I said, "Honey, I said, I don't know how to do this dad thing to somebody like you. I don't know how to be a dad to a daughter that's dating a boy. And I'm afraid, and I know I don't know how to do this right, and I'm going to screw up a lot, but I want to let you know that I would never try to embarrass you, and I love you, and that if you'll forgive me, I will do my best. I will do my best to not do something like that again, and I will try to ask more questions, and I will try to, if you're telling me things, I will not try to just give you an answer. I will just let you explain." And she got off of her bed, and she hugged me, and she said, "It's okay, I forgive you." And I learned how to do that here. I learned how to be that man here. And the days that I screw up, I have to go back and I have to make those things right. And I'm just grateful that I've been shown the example enough of love here that allowed me to stay, that you were able to look past the monster and see what was underneath it. And that you allowed me to be able to be here and show me what grace and love look like so that I could be a part of the very solution that you guys have. Thank you very much, and I love you all. Good night.